name is Albert Chi. I'm a trauma surgeon here at Johns Hopkins, and hopefully none of you ever see me again and never require my services, because if you do, things are probably pretty dire. Let me tell you, my typical day wouldn't be uncommon if you found me either operating on an emergent case in the operating room or even in the trauma bays trying to resuscitate a critically ill patient. My job, I kind of describe, is really orchestrating controlled chaos sometimes, and it really does feel like that. And sometimes it can get a little overwhelming, but I really just kind of keep my head down, try to stay calm, and keep everybody calm that's around me. It's interesting. The first time I ever laid eyes in the trauma bay wasn't as a medical professional. It was as one of those people that visit trauma bays just as much. It was as a patient. Just imagine yourself, it was a day just like today. It was really beautiful. It was 20 years ago, just finished exams. I got on my motorcycle and was heading home, had the straightaway, was heading straight. And the wind was blowing my hair, and I had hair back then. And the air was blowing in my hair because I didn't have a helmet on, okay? Going straight, and all of a sudden, boom, my whole life had changed. First feeling completely invincible and like just without a care in the world, and all of a sudden, this huge crash. I get thrown into oncoming traffic, and I'm just tumbling and tumbling and tumbling, and I'm tumbling. I see the sky, and I keep going over and over again, and I'm tumbling for so long, I'm literally thinking, I am tumbling for a long time. When is this going to stop? I see cars swerving around me. I get thrown into oncoming traffic, and then finally the tumbling stops. I'm like, hey, maybe I'm okay. You know, I'm on my back, and I try to stand up. And then all of a sudden, I look down, and my foot is dangling like this in the air. I'm really just hanging on by just a little piece of tissue that's still left. And then I notice with every heartbeat, I'm exsanguinating. You know, heartbeat, blood squirting onto the ground, squirting onto the ground. And I'm in just panicked, looking around. And fortunately, this gentleman runs up to me and immediately tells me he's a trauma nurse, and he's already called 911. EMS is on the way, and he tourniquets my leg. I look at him so thankfully, and I just tell him my name. My name is Albert Chi. Please tell my parents I'm sorry. They never wanted me riding that damn motorcycle. And please tell them I love them, and I'm so sorry. Because really, I thought I was going to die, and I didn't think I was going to make it, and I really wanted to express that to my family. So we go wheeling into the emergency department in an environment I'm very familiar with now, but back then it was completely foreign. I get the trauma welcome. They cut off all my clothes. And all of a sudden, I felt like I urinated myself. I felt this warmness in my lap. And it turns out it was the large femoral cordis they just put in because I was so hypotensive to have a large bore resuscitative IV to give me blood and to give me fluid. I was so hypotensive, they didn't allow me any pain medications. I remember I was just shaking in so much pain. And the ER doctor came up and took one look at my leg and said, son, this is going to hurt a little bit. But it turns out they'd splinted my leg and it was rotated 360 degrees. So they unsplinted me, completely twisted my leg around, and reset it. I remember all these physicians talking kind of about me and not really to me. You know, I heard things like vascular graft, we got to reestablish blood flow to the foot, you know, we may even have to amputate his leg. And thank goodness, because of the surgical expertise, because of all the physicians at the hospital, they were able to consider to reconstruct my leg, and they did, save my leg. You know, the trauma surgeons performed fasciotomies into my foot because there was so much swelling. And the vascular surgeons the first night took a vein from one leg, moved it to the other in order to reestablish blood flow to my foot. The orthopedic surgeons, they put an X-fix on my tibia. They put an X-foot on my foot. It turns out I broke every bone in my foot, every metatarsal, as well as crushing my midfoot that left me about an inch shorter. And there are 5 pins in every single toe as well. Of all those people that intervened on me, you'd be surprised who was the most memorable to me. It was actually my ICU nurse, immediately post-op, day zero. I remember waking up and really having the realization of the impact of my injuries, and I realized how really injured I was. And I want to tell you guys, I started crying, but it was actually a little more serious, and I probably started weeping, you know, really kind of uncontrollably. And my trauma nurse came in and just kind of held my hand and listened to me. And I told her, like, all the things. I'm so afraid I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to do that. And first, my trauma nurse scolded me for not wearing a helmet like every good trauma nurse should. But she looked at me square in the eye and said, look, son, you, I've been spared and you've been blessed. Think of, I see so many of these injuries come in and you didn't have a helmet on, you don't have a head injury, you're going to make it through this. And one of these days you're going to look back and this is going to be a distant memory. And hearing those words, I made a promise to myself that I would never complain about my injuries or my leg again. And that if I ever was pained or had a discomfort, there would be a positive memory or a positive reminder of all the blessings and things that I was given. And I've held true to that. Even with all my patients that I meet nowadays, I always make a point to connect with them. There's always that point, because I personally know the relief of a simple explanation or the comfort that you get when someone reaches out to you and shows you just a little compassion. With all the trauma patients, there's actually a point in the resuscitation. I actually go up and kind of whisper in their ear and tell them my name and tell them I'm here to take care of you. The staff has actually kind of caught on to this, and they've noticed the change in the patients after I do this, and they've given me the moniker, it's the trauma whisperer. It's just really kind of funny, right? So through the entire hospitalization, I came to really a new respect. New respect for life, because life never seemed more precious. And a new respect for the human body, because the body never seemed more fragile and more wondrous to me. It gave me a renewed motivation for school. So I finished my biomedical engineering degree, and it was at that point I decided I wanted to apply to medical school. I didn't have insurance at the time, and they didn't pay for rehab, so I was sent home. Mom took pretty good care of me. She fed me so much, on my next post-op visit, I actually gained 15 pounds. And all my favorite meals, and I remember asking my orthopedic surgeon, hey, how much does that rod in my tibia weigh? Because I've gained a little weight. And he looked at me screaming and goes, Albert, that rod don't weigh no 15 pounds. At that same moment, I was really probably at the lowest point in my recovery. And that same orthopedic surgeon, I asked him again, you know, what? How much recovery am I going to have? Will I ever be normal again? And that orthopedic surgeon looked at me and said, Albert, you're never going to be normal again. And really almost kind of dismissively. And it hurt. It really hurt. And those words really sunk in. And it really, you know, made its home in my heart and my mind. And I really thought I could never be normal again. So even though I felt maybe in my mind and my heart I was limited physically, mentally I would never be limited again. And that's when I really turned it on with the academics and really wanted to study hard and apply to medical school. I've been really fortunate at Hopkins that I participate in a program called Adopt-A-Class. And it's a program where we go into inner city fourth graders' classrooms and we teach them skills to really dream big and to try to achieve your goals. And as part of the diversity portion, I always ask them, hey folks, given my appearance, kids, where do you guys think I was born? And at the end of the whole tour, we give them a tour of the hospital at the end of the year after we've been going to the classrooms. And they must have been super impressed with the tour, because instead of saying something like China or Japan, they said, Johns Hopkins? It was really cute. But as in addition to that, too, I really want to inspire them to tell them that things that are worthwhile in life are hard to achieve. And I tell them about my application to medical school. It's not a fairy tale application for me. I finished my undergraduate degree, I applied, and guess what? I didn't get in, okay? Took some more classes, took some more advanced engineering classes. I thought, okay, second time's the charm. I must be getting it this time. Applied, and guess what? I didn't get in. I keep knocking on this door. In my heart, I knew this is where I belonged. This is what I wanted to do. My parents were even getting a little like, hey, Albert, maybe you should start thinking about a backup plan. You know, my father was a PhD in math and always was pushing engineering, and I always wanted to play Little League and throw the ball around. My dad was always more interested in calculating how long it would take if we threw a ball up 20 miles an hour, and I figured the math out. 7.6 seconds, Dad. Good job, boy. Good job. But in the meantime, what I did was I finished my master's degree in biomedical engineering. And as fate would have it, if any of you did see the Breakthrough 60 Minutes special, my mentor at the time was the same gentleman that was featured on 60 Minutes with cortical control, basically control of robotic limbs with thought. And we were actually both featured together on that. It's interesting how everything has really come full circle. So third time is the charm. I finally got in after my third time applying. And I studied really hard. I had this one friend of mine who was my study partner, but also very athletic and very outgoing. And he was always going on hikes and doing all this fun stuff on the weekends. And he'd always invite me. And those words, "Albert, you're never going to be normal again," was just always there on my shoulder and always there in the back of my mind. And I would always say no. I didn't think I could do it. You know, in my mind, my body image of myself was disabled and crippled. I would start in med school. I still used a cane. But that friend of mine never gave up on me. He kept inviting me every weekend, kept inviting me. And finally, I gave in and said, "Fine, if I say yes, will you finally shut up and leave me alone? I know I can't do this, okay, but I'll do it just to kind of get you to get off my back." And I loved it. It was great. What started as a little hike here turned into more hikes. We started doing more adventurous stuff. We started biking. And that friend really healed me. It was rehab through friendship. And that friend healed those words, "Albert, you'll never be normal again." Well, with that relationship, we did some pretty incredible things. "Albert, you're never going to be normal again." We actually raised $12,000 for AIDS charities with the California AIDS Rides, biking each of us individually 564 miles from San Francisco to Los Angeles. I've actually run the Baltimore Half Marathon and the San Diego Half Marathon. I've climbed Mount Whitney, the highest point in the contiguous U.S. "Albert, your leg will never be normal again." Well, my senior year in medical school, I actually summited Mount Whitney. And I swear, we're up there. You're up so high, it seems like you almost see the curvature of the world. And I remember standing up there and thinking of those words, "Albert, your leg will never be normal again." It's pretty incredible. I've seen and been to some pretty high places, and there have been a lot of highlights. And I got to tell you, in my entire career, the greatest highlight has really been being a part of this organization. Johns Hopkins really has opened so many doors for me, and it is the place I absolutely want to be. You know, this last year, Laura mentioned that we started a targeted muscle reinnervation program. This is really a cutting-edge surgery for individuals with upper extremity injuries and amputations. And we perform a local reinnervation surgery of nerves that allow patients to control advanced prosthetics using intuitive thought. Through the relationships of Hopkins, the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, I've actually had access to the world's most advanced prosthetic limb. I mean, it's literally like a Terminator arm, and we fit these on patients who have lost their extremities, and we've started the first sensory studies in the entire world. One of my first patients, can you just imagine, we've been missing an arm for multiple years, and we fit this limb on them, and his wife reached over and touched him, and he said that was the first time he ever felt his wife touch his hand in so many years, and literally brought tears to his eyes as well as all those people in the audience. Laura also mentioned it's been a real honor to be here, but really my journey has led me to join the Navy Reserves, and hopefully with all the training that I've been through, to utilize those skills to help those wounded warriors and those injured soldiers coming back who've really given life and limb for our country. So Albert, your leg will never be normal again. Well, he was right. It's been anything but normal. It's been an honor talking to you guys tonight. Just thank you so much for having me.